This is The Last Video Store, a sacred bastion of culture, film, movies, and cinema. My name is Alexi Toliopoulos, and I am the guardian of this sacred realm. And it is my duty to connect people with the films they love. Our new member of The Last Video Store signing up today is a true Renaissance man, Tony Armstrong. You know Tony Armstrong from ABC News Breakfast. He's a wicked sports player back in the day. And yeah, that's the term that I use, sports player, AFL star for the Sydney Swans. But let me tell you this, Tony Armstrong is like one of the most exciting guys I've ever met, my dear close personal friend, because he is doing so much cool stuff at the moment, working on so many cool things, writing, doing like so many unexpected things that are so exciting. And one of the most extraordinary things he's doing is a factual series. You know I love documentaries. You know I love factual stuff. And his new show, Tony Armstrong's Extraordinary Things, premieres on ABC very soon. It's launching in May. But we want to get this out there to start building and teasing your hype for his foray into the world of factual documentaries. We'll talk about a little bit more on the show today. But until then, let me tell you this, the new member combo that Tony is going to get. I am going to sign him up to the store. He's going to get out a new release film. That's any film from like the last 5 or so years. Then I'm going to give him 2 weekly picks. Those are 2 of his favorite films of all time. And a bespoke customized recommendation based on his taste. And as a little bonus, because you're about to see this, we're in the back room. We had to do some renovations of the store. There was a leak. There was a leak. A torrential rain sought upon us here in Batuta. El Nino, La Nina, they joined forces and they crashed us with rain. We had a leak. We had a freaking leak. And I had to clean up all the DVDs. So we had to take him into the back room. And because of that, because he got that back room treatment, baby, I'm giving him an extra weekly. As a thank you, as an apology, the guy's going to have 3 freaking weeklies. Maybe that's going to be tough of me to put together. I like a perfect recommendation, but you know, I'm confident. I got a good idea of what this guy likes. So let's get into the show with Tony Armstrong. Well, 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 look who has rocked up to the Last Video Store, but my dear old buddy, Tony Armstrong.
It is so nice to be here. And I've got to say, I love what you've done with the place.
Oh, absolutely. We're in the back room.
Oh, the back room.
Mm. Yes.
You know, it's where you find clerks.
Exactly. This is my nightmare, this room. The back room is where we keep all the discs. No. All the cases are out there on the floor, but here, this is where the real magic happens. The films, each disc contains at least one beautiful film. So many memories, so many dreams contained on these reflective surfaces, hidden away in their little sleeves. Each one a lucky dip with a corresponding number written on each case. So here you are in.
I hate you.
You're in the cerebellum of the video store, my friend. The heart, the soul, the mind.
What am I even supposed to say to that? Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, man.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Well, it's a pleasure to have you here, my friend. I know that you're in town. You're working on little things in Batuta Way at the moment.
Yes, I am.
I'm going to sign you up to the video store, presumably, while you're here. You want to watch a couple of movies?
Mate, always. There's always time to watch a flick.
And, you know, Batuta, we've got no freaking internet. That's why I'm here. I had to become here and do my duty. It's my mission on earth to serve those people, to help people connect with the movies that they love. And this is my final outpost, my final resting place.
Is this it? Is this where you shoulder arms and that's it?
That's
you're done.
It. I've retired here.
Oh my God.
My dream come true to retire with my many discs.
What do you do after hours?
Well, I watch the movies.
That's a really dumb question on my behalf.
And there's a certain beaded section around here where I will take many a surgeon to a beaded section of the store by the lovely beaded curtain. But I'm going to sign you up to the store. All I'm going to need is a single piece of identification from you. Mm-hmm. And it's coming up on my system right away. I've got a wonderful announcement.
Oh, wow.
ABC up front. The press release is out. Tony Armstrong's Extraordinary Things.
Yes,
and
yes.
Here in Batuta filming an episode.
Yes, we have just been here in Batuta shooting an episode. We just got it all in the can here, so we headed down to the pub to talk
the local watering hole.
To talk all about the Batuta pub. Mm.
This series that you're working now, it's like a great docu-series where you find interesting objects.
Yeah, extraordinary things where
interesting objects is the working title.
Yeah, we left that on the floor for a reason. Extraordinary things, I guess, can look like anything, you know. They don't necessarily have to be Cathy Freeman's gold medal, although that is extraordinary.
I would say it's quite extraordinary.
It could be a phone case. It could be a lapel. It could be a briefcase. It could be literally anything, because it's less about...
I can't wait for the lapel episode.
It goes off and on and off again. But I guess it's more about the stories that they unlock. Mm. And, you know, and the show has been a great way for me to, I guess, connect with a lot of people right across the country and have them tell their stories. And I guess what I learned through the shooting of the show, everyone's got something amazing to tell. Everyone's got an amazing story to tell, and it can be unlocked through the simplest of objects. And so that show will come out sometime in May. So very, very excited for that. And just a thrill to come here to Leafy Batuta. I guess no one's called it Leafy.
No.
I'm just having a crack at bringing that in.
Well, we've got the tree out front.
Yeah, the tree
is out front of here.
And it's looking not great. Yeah.
Not good. We will have to kind of make a little manure concoction for it to start thriving again.
I was thinking water it, but sure.
Hey, it needs a lot more help than that.
Go down the manure path. That's fine.
So I find the show so interesting because it's like, I like the idea of taking these physical things and finding the connections that we have with them. Are there any of those stories that you're like particularly excited about or excited to expose to the population of Australia? After all, it's mandatory viewing. Everyone has to watch the show.
Yeah, watch it, all right? So we got to have a chat to a young Indigenous rapper from WA. His name's Inkaby. I'm not sure if you remember last year at a mutual friend of ours back in Sydney, Ben Johnson, his pub, the Lord Gladstone. Mm-hmm.
The Gladdy.
The One Gladdy. The clubs. Chance the rapper played there.
Yeah.
And Inkaby played on stage with Chance the rapper. He rapped with him. Anyway, we got to have a chat to him. He's only 11 at the time of filming. And we got to have a look at his notebook where he writes his raps. And, you know, basically the thing that he kickstarted his own journey and his own, walk down this path that he finds himself on now. I cannot wait for people to see that, part of the show, because... Yeah, we're looking at a future leader, not just in I guess the entertainment space, but from an Aboriginal point of view, he's going to be a real leader of our people. And nice to get in at the ground floor and just have a yarn to him. I just cannot wait. People are going to love him. But it's all sorts of things. People are going to love it, I think. So yeah, make sure you have a look in our May. So a couple of months now.
Couple of months, or who knows, maybe this episode will force them to release the series
now
to get on the heat of everyone talking about it.
Well, they're going to be talking about it after this, that's for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely, and absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, damn it. I should have said that one.
Absolutely.
All right, Tony, I'm going to send you out into the store.
Okay.
You've got the beautiful new members, rental combo. One new release, 3 weeklies. For you, it's going to be 3 weeklies.
3 weeklies? Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to give you a bespoke, customized recommendation based on your picks, a staff pick, an Alexi choice, if you will.
Oh, gee whiz. That is much sought after. You don't even give these choices to me outside the world of this podcast.
I very handily have them out like, dude, this will be content one day. I'm saving it for that. So you've got a choice of basically any movie ever. Go on out there.
Okay.
Pick your flicks. Come on back. We'll talk about them.
Okay, great.
release.
Okay, we're here with your new release. Mm-hmm. And this is a spicy one.
Yeah, look, I'm actually not sure how I found it in the new release section. I'm not sure if it falls within the last 5 years.
It just makes the cut. Thank 2019. But this is a film I absolutely love. This is Bong Joon-ho's instant classic.
Instant classic, Parasite.
Thriller.
And I've got to say, what I loved about this film was the sheer creativity to come up with a storyline like this. The gumption of our protagonist's family, I guess. The sheer audacity of them to try to pull off what they're trying to pull off. Mm-hmm. And then stylistically, you're looking at this thing and you're going, every single shot is like, it could be in the photograph of the year. It could like as a still. Mm-hmm. And then I guess the style, I think we all fell in love with Korean style for a little while after this film came out. Everyone was on it. Was running the kind of straight leg, kind of billowy pants a little bit more, you know, maybe a little bit more boxy tops as well. And then it was hilarious. You know, like we're touching on some really dark stuff. Like, you know, we're talking about people who are completely overtaking other people's identity. They are, by hook or by crook, sneaking their way into people's houses, stealing their trust. And then at the end of it, it turns into a slasher. Like, what the hell?
I think that's what's so exciting about incredible. It, right? Because it's like this mix of tensions, tones, a few different genres kind of blended together. And Bong Joon-ho has kind of always done that. I think he's a director that really understands genre and genre as a means to communicate to people. And I think that's what really excites me about this. I still remember seeing Parasite for the first time. It would have been just after its premiere at the City Film Festival. And it played really big here. It had just played Cannes as well. And I remember seeing it in this screening, just going by myself. Had a couple of other friends that were there. And it was on my radar, but I kind of was not good. I didn't have a knowing what it was going to be.
You weren't?
I wasn't primed.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man.
And I remember just turning to my friend who was next to me after and going like, holy shit, like this is big, right? This feels like it's going to be big. And Bong Joon-ho had already made Memories of Murder, was kind of like a popular breakthrough film for him. At that point already, Snowpiercer had been his kind of way breaking into like a bigger
audience.
Yeah, bigger audience, American filmmaking. But I think Parasite kind of really returns to his, not just like location-wise, but to his Korean filmmaking roots of Korean filmmaking had like a great new wave in that 2000s period between like Bong Joon-ho, Park Chan-wook, making independent films that have like this undercurrent of something through them. Like there's an excitement, there's a tension, there's a genre to them. And I think Parasite, the way that it kind of delights in comedy while then using that as a way to like leverage a tragedy that comes on.
Oh man, like I remember when it's revealed to you that there is like life under the house. And you're just like, whoa.
It's like feels like a genuine twist.
It's like this is a wrinkle I didn't see coming.
But it makes sense. And it feels so powerful in the connective tissue when it comes to the themes of, you know, I love movies where you can just go the title and then go, who is the real Parasite?
100%. And I suppose like if you were to put all these things on paper and say them all without having watched the film, you go, well, there's no way that I'm actually going to believe that. There's no way that this film is going to be able to do that in a manner that's grounded enough. Because that's like batshit crazy, right? That is off its head. But then you watch it and at no point are you going, oh, that's broken.
It never feels untethered from the reality.
That's broken set. The world.
Yeah.
He never breaks the world. It's
the only time he broke the world was when that film went all the way to win Best Picture at the Oscars.
Oh, man, how and good.
What a great journey. Like, you never see a journey like that, especially it's one of the very few international and foreign language films to take out that award. Off the top of my head, can't think of another one straight away.
So I'll put it in post.
I think it's shows like that. I think there's a willingness now for people to want to explore foreign language films. I think Parasite was such a groundbreaking film for a new generation of people to embrace Korean cinema.
Well, I think a lot of people, me being one of them, went back and revisited a New Boy.
Old Boy.
Oh, Old Boy, sorry. Yeah, Old Boy. Went back and revisited that.
Yeah.
And then watched it with a newfound appreciation for just how good it was. Mm. As like the ultimate revenge flick, right?
One of my very favorite movies.
The ultimate revenge flick. Mm. And, you know, I was also probably a bit young when I first watched it, you know.
Yeah.
Might have watched that sort of.
It can warp your brain, that one.
Might have watched it, you know, in between mm-hmm. being on a phone or something. Mm-hmm. But then after watching Parasite and having watched Parasite in the cinema, then I was like, okay, I'm going to do it properly. All I hear about is how good this is.
Yeah.
And I remember having watched it and being like, meh. And then I was like, whoa. And I think we saw, you know, there was that. And then what was that Netflix show that came out in...
Squid Game.
So then
Squid Game going so big is definitely part of that narrative, part of the world changing.
I think because then we saw a lot of, I guess, those Korean narrative shows
mm-hmm.
come through that Netflix funnel. Because there was a huge appetite for them.
And I think not just that, thinking about cinema as a worldwide form or even just visual media now, I think Parasite kind of kicks off a new cycle of films and TV shows that deal with class in a way like this. I don't think without Parasite, I don't think we have a Saltburn the way that we have it. And then you've got White Lotus coming not too soon after
it.
You start seeing those films that are dealing with class and the disparity between the classes and like that as like a friction point between them all. I think Parasite really kicks that off.
Yeah, I mean, far out. It's interesting you put Saltburn and Parasite in the same bracket because they actually are. I'd never considered it like that, but God, no disrespect to Saltburn, which I really enjoyed, but I mean, Parasite's one out of the box, man.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to match up against Parasite and come away a winner.
And that's why I think it's such a great pick. We're going to get into the weeklies. Before I do,
yes,
I've got to ask you one more question before I finish signing you up. Have you ever been a member of another video store before? Because you're going to have to swear your allegiance to us, brother.
Hey, look, I am in the cult. Consider me signed up. Now, I was pretty young when I left Sydney. So I left Sydney with mum when I was, and this is Western Sydney, mm-hmm. when I was, I'm going to say 11.
Yeah. At 11, you're just getting your own taste as well, I reckon.
Just.
Starting to build it.
Just, right?
Yeah.
And I reckon it was Fairfield Video Easy.
Video Easy
mm-hmm. in Fairfield. Man, it used to be so fun. And like, I think that is actually one thing. And this is going to like make me sound like they don't know what they're missing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there was truly something about the ritual of on a Friday night.
Absolutely. The ceremony of it all.
Exactly, you know? Right. And you look at, you know, so many things about mental health and all that kind of stuff, about having ritual, having ceremony, whatever it may be, you know, going for your morning coffee, going and doing this. And I remember we'd go every Friday night. My mom's a school teacher as well. So Friday night after school, we'd go down in the Video Easy and you'd just be walking through it, you know, and depending on what time you got there, you know, the big movie of the time was probably gone. It was, you know, like you had to kind of get there.
The spot's empty.
Yeah.
You're looking for the tape behind it. You're
like, and all you see is like the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh no. And they'd always have like three or four of them.
Yeah.
And
you're like, God, someone's going to hit one somewhere. Yeah.
And then you'd always go up the front and ask, oh, any of them that you haven't put out yet? Oh, no. And like that wouldn't happen here at Batuta Videos.
No, you'd be straight on that,
a million copies. Mm-hmm. I know that. That's because you've got all of the ones that are obsolete. Yeah.
Did you ever go exploring through the shop?
Oh man, see, this is the thing, and you would, right? Because mm-hmm. like, you know, you might have a deal not dissimilar to the one that I'm partaking mm-hmm. in right now, where you might walk away with four films. And of course, mum being the benevolent mother that she was, she would only want to choose one for herself and give me three. And you know, you might let the legs, the little getaway sticks go for a bit of a walk around the store.
And I'll never forget, there was this film and there was this superhero called Spawn. Now, Spawn, dude, I don't know if you remember. I'm looking at you nodding right now.
Oh, man, I'm nodding big time. Okay. I feel like this is like a shared memory between us.
Oh, my God, dude. Okay, like, do you remember?
I remember the cover.
The cover, right?
And it's like that big green glowing eye.
Eyes and like just the faint outline of the skull, right? Yeah,
and you're like, holy shit, and this is devilish.
And then if you flipped it, it had him on the... Do you remember on the on
he's like cresting.
The pop- yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh, right? And I was like, I wanted to watch that movie for so long, man. Yeah, I'm talking probably 2.5 years.
Yeah.
I would like eye it off.
Were you trepidatious? Were you scared?
Well, I think I was like, oh my god, he looks so cool. He's a superhero, man. I think it was DC. I think he's part of the DC universe. I can't confirm that.
Let me look it up because I'll tell you this. I went through a similar thing where I had a mini Spawn obsession. I never saw the movie. Read the book.
Have you
never
seen
done
it?
Any of the, never. Never since.
Okay.
Because I was always scared of him.
Can we pinky promise? We're watching that together, brother.
Absolutely.
Stamp it. Yeah, nice.
Spawn. You ever seen it?
I haven't seen it either. Oh.
We both not seen Spawn.
I know.
It's like a big part of us.
I know. And like my access to Spawn right now would be quite easy, I think.
Oh yeah.
It's a couple of keystrokes. But yeah, I remember always wanting to hire that, but never having the gumption to ask mum.
Wow. Spawn is Image Comics.
Image Comics.
He's not DC or Marvel.
Oh.
Oh, the twist we never saw coming.
Coming. Yeah, we're big into Image now.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that upon reflection is so funny, I think every single family in Australia had a DVD repair kit.
Yeah.
Everyone had the DVD repair kit. And you put it in and it'd clean itself.
Clean it up. And those little whiskers. Little whiskers on the disc, that, clean like, that lens.
And so nostalgic. So nice. So I'm glad you had the courage to man this outpost. It was my duty, mate. This last bastion.
The last bastion.
The last bastion of physical DVD hire.
Well, it's my honor, it's my duty, it's my privilege.
Oh, nice.
You've got a few other beautiful weeklies here.
Weekly.
The first one I'm seeing on that pile, it is a film that I think is sublime, transcendent. It's a movie that means so much to me. It is Spirited Away.
Oh my God.
From Miyazaki.
Adventure.
Where were you when you first saw this movie? Did you see it as a kiddo?
So, dude, I saw it when I was like 16. Mm-hmm. But I've just realized I seem like
an eye-opening age to come across something like this.
Man, I seem like the biggest flog. The first two films I've gone for are non-English.
We're seeing a whole other side,
dude. I love cinema. No, but I guess so. I've always loved fantasy books.
Mm.
So like the genre that I would always pick up, it was never like crime, it was never biography, it was always fantasy, right?
And I think Spirited Away, it's that portal fantasy.
When
you're like, the idea of portal fantasy where, you know, you start in the real world, there's a portal, there's something that takes you to a fantastic place, a world of surrealism.
Oh my God.
And when you're a kid, it's those movies or those books like this one for sure, Wizard of Oz, Harry Potter, those kind of portal fantasies where you go, maybe there's something more out there. Maybe there's something in this world I don't understand. Was that what like draws you to those things?
Dude, it's funny you say that. So one of my favorite fantasy books is called Magician. Mm-hmm. And that starts, yes, in a slightly different world, but it still starts in a world where there's like it's humans, it's knights, it's that, and then they've got the mage.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there's like dragons and ghouls and all this kind of stuff, which is, I'd never made that link. It is portal fantasy. And I guess what I loved about Spirited Away was, again, just the sheer audacity to tell a story in that manner and have it look the way it did. Or every convention of how you think something should look is gone. I have no idea where the inspiration for so many of these creatures comes. Because, yeah, sure, there's like, there's dragons mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. But then there's like the spider dude down the bottom yeah. who's like rattling away all the stuff to send back up the top. Like, what kind of dude is that?
It's like, so it's that idea of surrealism where you're like, oh, it's an unbridled, unchained imagination.
And I know. Like,
oh, someone whose imagination is so free, they can concoct things that are so dreamy, so dreamlike.
Exactly right. And then it's beautiful.
Mm.
It is just a beautiful, beautiful story. You empathize with everyone involved. Mm. Everyone, like you're rooting for just about everyone.
Mm.
Like, I think with a lot of Studio Ghibli stuff,
mm-hmm.
it's like you aren't even sure if you leave necessarily with this huge, like, moral epiphany.
Mm.
It's just a beautifully told story that's kind of told in a different way. Like, the resolution's always a bit different to what Western
yeah.
films are like.
Man, I'm actually really... The way you say that's, like, quite moving. Like, that it's not an epiphany. And I think you're hitting on, like, what it is. Like, the spirituality of these films, especially when you think about them, they're films for young people, or young people is someone that he's trying to speak to with these films. And it's not like an epiphany. It's almost like there's a melancholy to them that you're kind of left with. And I think those are why those films resonate so much, especially when you're young. You're like, wow, there is this like portal to another world, but it reflects like what we are here and like what your life is there. And I think it is the best example of that. I would say, I'm gonna be vulnerable for a moment. I think this is one of the very best movies ever made.
Oh!
Yeah, I really do. When I saw you pick this one, I got so excited.
Oh, man. And like just what you said there as well, like the melancholy, she leaves the world.
Mm.
She leaves the world. She leaves her brand new friend behind forever.
And it's the tough lessons that you have to learn in life as well. So it's
it captures
the beauty of those feelings.
And like, you know, it's not drummed, like, you know, I never had the epiphany that, oh, you know, life has seasons, but that's all moments or like, you know, but that's exactly what it is. And just to do it so beautifully and have it still speak to me, a 34-year-old now. I watched it only the other day after I gave you the I gave you the record. I was like, far out, these films aren't bad, Tone. Well done. and I watched it, I was like, far out, it's incredible. And you can't not have some moisture come out of your eyes when you watch them, unfortunately.
Okay. Not me, mate. Not me, tough as guts, mate. Before we move on to your next pick, it would be remiss of us to not talk about it because I think our deep bond and friendship is based around this. Foods.
Oh!
And in Spirited Away, like, people always talk about like anime food and food in particular in Ghibli movies as being so unctuous and like beyond perfection. I think that's what it is. Like, because it's animated, you can make it look the ideal version is. Like, when you think about like that philosophical term of like idealism, like what is the perfect version of it? The only way you can achieve that is by freaking drawing it from your heart.
I know, man. And like every time you see it and like food prepping Ghibli films, my God, it's just like, I mean, if people who are watching haven't done this, do yourself a favor and just type into whatever social media you have and type in anime food prep.
Mm-hmm.
And just watch them like chopping up spring onions and, you know, cracking eggs and making omelets and fried rice. It's just, oh, it is perfection. And you're right. There is, well, I guess so much of the lesson to be learned in Spirited Away is about not gorging yourself and not.
Oh, God. Well, the lesson, well, let's, I mean, say, it was, who missed hasn't us. Learned it, it's yeah.
I know. We certainly have rolled out of a few restaurants. But, yeah, I mean, the food in Ghibli and Spirited Away particularly, insane.
On the complete other side of the spectrum, we've gone from surrealism. Your next pick is one of the great masterpieces of grounded, realistic crime cinema. It is Michael Mann's epic Heat.
Crime?
Bro, how good? How good is this film?
That could be the whole conversation.
I know.
What is it? Because I think what is exciting about Heat, it is that when I use the term epic, I really mean it. It's so many things. What is that element that captures you most about this film?
I mean, Pacino and De Niro head to head.
Mm-hmm.
A cop who you think is a worse guy than a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Just how they're so intrinsically...
two sides of the same coin, buddy.
I know.
Two sides.
It's out of...
I'm on this side.
Oh!
And I'm on this side.
And I'm this side. And, I mean, that scene where they sit opposite each other.
Yeah. I was such a little nerd. These were my heroes. No shit, dudes. When I was a teenager, in my little Velcro Mambo wallet... Oh, I had a printed out picture of Al Pacino and Robert De Niro.
That's so cool.
That I used to just keep in my wallet.
You are a sweetheart.
Well, it was before I had a smartphone. I couldn't just Google what they looked like. I just needed to go every now and then. I need to see just a picture of these
reminded.
Guys.
Just need to be reminded.
It was just a little printout. One side, they were on each side. So, you know, that was like my little cop and criminal on the same side. The different sides of the coin.
I mean, no happy ending.
Mm.
I love that.
Yes.
I get so annoyed with happy endings when you can just tell that they've been like plastered on at the end for, I can only assume, middle America.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and just like the, you know, the slow zooms, shots that are taken.
And that kind of like that blue color palette.
The hue that comes through. Val Kilmer killing it in his role. Forget like you kind of forget he's in it even.
Yeah.
Like, he turns in a bloody masterpiece.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think it's like that. For me, like, where Heat really ascends is it's that epic scope where it's so many different stories being told. You've got the two leads opposing each other, but then there's all these other aspects of the life of crime and how this film kind of explores those. And what really hit me the last time I watched this is there is this one small plot line that kind of runs throughout. And when it finally connects to the film, it's a bit of a heartbreaker, which is Dennis Haysbert, the wonderful actor. He plays a guy who's trying to go straight and he's working as a cook in a crappy little diner. And you can just see these little glimpses of his life just not working, people not respecting him. And when the moment comes to get back into crime as the way out of the straight life, he goes for it. And there's something about that that's so heartbreaking and so much like a story of like, that's American crime.
That, oh man. And I guess the other part of the American crime, not the other part, one of the other parts, when you hear the VO of De Niro and he's like, you've got to be willing to drop everything and be out the door in 30 seconds, have no connections to behind. And it's like, it's his little love story. It's him. Mm. It's him wanting connection that ends up costing him.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that he wouldn't change that decision is like what is powerful about that performance and that character.
Oh, it's just, it's so epic and it's wild how it like starts, like they're all alone, blah, 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 blah. And then at the end, like basically what Pacino's character sees is her in the car.
Mm.
And him, and then he's like, well, he's around, you know? It's just so good.
Man, they're doing Heat 2.
Yes.
The book is out.
I've seen that.
I've been too trepidatious to read it because now they're talking about it going to actually be a movie.
I don't want to read the book.
That's it. I'm saving myself for the film. Who do you want to fill those shoes? Me and you, maybe, or
I mean, we've got the chops. I don't know if we've got the street cred. Far out. Imagine if like Bill Hader.
Oh man, doing both. Doing both. That's
see. Well, because like you often hear people say that people who are grounded in comedy are incredible straight guys.
Yeah,
incredible straight guys, and we've seen how dark Bill Hader goes in Barry. So I can see him going, and we've seen him do a Pacino impression as well.
Man, can I pitch you my remake idea?
Go.
Because I think the only way to improve Heat is for them to fuck. I think that's the only way for them after the diner scene to go, yeah, you want to come back to my place? That's how you do it. But here is what I'm thinking. And they can go either way. Either way you want to cast it, who's the cop, who's the criminal? Denzel and Angela Bassett.
Oh, huge. Denzel, Halle Berry.
Oh, that's cool. We got a hot movie. It's not just called Heat. No, it's called Hot. Okay, somewhere between the surrealist masterpiece that is Spirited Away.
Yes.
And the gritty, grounded heist film that is Heat lies a movie directly in the dead center of them, and it's your final pick. It is Christopher Nolan's dreamy heist film, Inception.
Action.
Man, I mean,
did you make that correlation when you put these together?
No, like so when I sent you my list, it was kind of funny how quickly you connected the dots. I was like, whoa, I'd never considered that.
Well, it's my one purpose in this world.
I think you've got a few more, but sure.
My brain is wired and exertly that way.
But yeah, I guess upon reflection, like all of my films are like adventure.
Mm.
They're all adventure. They're all kind of like a lot of the characters are somewhere where they shouldn't be. And a lot of these characters are technically doing the wrong thing in accordance with the world that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that says about what I like about me and what I like. However, I mean, Inception, I remember the first time I watched it,
Do you see it in cinemas?
I saw it in the cinemas. I was just blown away. Mm-hmm. Like, because I saw Batman Begins in the cinema.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Huge.
But Inception was bigger.
Because it's something else. Just like going, oh, it's an original vision that I'm seeing.
And then, you know, not only is it, I guess, literally bigger in terms of scope, but then mentally it's huge, right? So I loved the mental gymnastics that you go through as a character. I thought the performances were fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Were you going on to like message boards, like reading what the theories and stuff were?
Dude, I'm like pretty average with tech and like getting involved in that kind of thing. So like I've never been involved in message boards or Reddit threads or anything like that. So I guess that's a long, polite way of saying no. You fucking nerd.
I didn't do it. I didn't sign it.
I've heard about it. But I mean, if you call like a message board, like sitting with my mates and go, what do you reckon happened to me?
Yeah, okay. Someone had mates in real life. I get it.
But I've got to say, like, the premise is crazy, right? Yeah. How cool is that? And then to just like slowly bring in this tension of his own mind getting to him,
and the darkness of it,
and letting her in and letting his own guilt. And then is he lost? Is he lost to it all? You know, I love that. And again, not a Hollywood ending.
Tell you what I really like about this movie, and it kind of comes after a movement in the early 2000s, late 90s. I call it the millennium mindfuck era of cinema, where there's all these movies at the turn of the millennium that fuck with your head.
Like Donnie Darko.
Donnie Darko's number one, The Matrix, Truman Show, those films. And a lot of them deal with like that same kind of surrealism.
Existentialism, all existential, that kind of stuff.
Like, who are we? Why do we exist? Who are the fuck are you, man? Like all of those kind of movies. Where's your head at? Is the song that would play for these movies.
Yeah, like, I'm so into that.
Yeah, so it's like that kind of feeling. And so almost like this modern or Americanized surrealism, which is this idea of taking something complex and then distilling that down to an image and then turning it into cinema. And I think this does it really well. It's not just dreams, but it's like psyche as well, and like how you, like those feelings of repression, like how your mind works and how your brain interprets those things through emotion, how they feel, how they look. And I think because Nolan is such like, he's a logical guy. Like he's such a guy that is all about like grounding in reality. Like his take on Batman was like, it's real. And then with this, it's like he takes those images and goes, okay, how do I make it real? How do I actually explore these in a physical way? And I think there's something about that pragmatic sense of this movie that is kind of like the secret weapon of this film and why it sticks with you.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because you could so easily have flying cars and like spaceships and all that kind of stuff because we're in dreams.
But the dreams are given defense, mm-hmm. and he uses great dialogue.
Mm-hmm. And he introduces it so well. Like, the rules are laid out so nicely.
And what a great scene with the young architect. I've forgotten the name of...
We've got Elliot Page.
Elliot Page.
Yeah.
So Elliot Page plays this architect. We've got Leo as the master architect. Mm-hmm. And how do they set up the rules? How do they tell us so obviously? Oh, let me show you. And then just a very, very blatant, mm-hmm. this is blatant. It's some of the best exposition you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's what interesting because with these kind of movies, often it's like that science fiction exposition where I go, well, let me dumb it down for you, bucko. But instead, no, this is a freaking heist movie. It's laid out like a heist movie. You're getting that heist
exposition. You're stealing something from in someone's mind. That's what it is.
That's it. And you go like, okay, we're going to get the team together. Here's the team. Here's how we do it. And like every heist movie, it doesn't always go exactly to plan, but you know what the plan is. So you see the failures happen. You understand how it unravels.
You can't do that. Oh, mm-hmm. no. Here's your dead wife. Oh, no. Shivers. What are we going to do? Like,
it's a Nolan movie. They say shivers. They don't say the swear words. But one thing, speaking of those theories, the reading of this film that I've always loved is that this is Christopher Nolan's film about filmmaking. And I've always found that so attractive because the team is, you've got Ken Watanabe's character. He's the studio. He's the one funding it all. Leonardo DiCaprio is the director. He directs everything. You've got Elliot Page as the architect. That's a set designer. You've got Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He's the one that kind of puts the team together. He's the producer. And then you've got wonderful, like the kind of first big exposure we all had to Tom Hardy.
And wasn't he great?
And he's so good because he kind of embodies that actor.
And he comes in and he goes, well, what you going to need right there? Yeah, yeah. He is, you're so right. I had a mental note to talk about how good Tom Hardy was, mm-hmm. in this before I came in. And then I'm glad you just jogged my memory. His performance, it's fantastic. And also, you know, I mean, the performances are at another level. I loved this film for all the reasons we've just said. I think it's not underrated, but I think it could get more flowers.
I'll tell you this. It's a movie that I like more every time I revisit it. I remember when it came out, I was a little bit cold on it, but I went back to it a couple of years ago and I just was like,
loved it. Yeah.
I loved it. And I feel like that's often the way with me with Christopher Nolan films. Like sometimes...
Oh, I wish that was the way with Tenet. Oh my God. I just never got there with Tenet.
Me neither. I'm still trying. Because these films are just a little bit cold. They're a little bit emotionless for me. So it's kind of like, but when they are, Dunkirk, I think, gets all the way there for me. And then, of course, Oppenheimer. I really loved it.
Dude, what about Dunkirk when you realize that they're all in the same timeline?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and like when you clock onto the fact...
They're in the same space. You're like,
they're all in the same space. They're all in the same timeline. Mm-hmm. Just one of them you see for 3 minutes on screen. The other you see for 28 minutes, mm-hmm. And the other one you see for the... Just blew my mind. I was like, oh my God. Oh, what a master filmmaker.
Staff pick.
It's time for me to offer you my staff pick.
Well, finally. I've
chucked all of these in the algorithm. Absolutely, we're finally here. And I think, like, you know, that observation that we made of these films being like Spirited Away is this surrealist masterpiece. It's very dreamy. And then you've got Inception being the dreamy heist film, and all the other way on the spectrum, you've got Heat being a grounded heist film. And I was looking at those, I go, okay, why don't we just recalibrate that spectrum a little bit? And I've got you a wonderful film. And I'm going to tell you this. This is, firstly, a recommendation for all of this filmmaker's films, because I think you will love them. Not only is a huge influence on Christopher Nolan, especially with Inception, the hat that you're currently wearing on your head, Requiem for a Dream. And I always pronounce that like it's a rhyme for some reason, by Darren Aronofsky. This is, I think he might be Darren Aronofsky's favorite filmmaker.
Oh.
It's a man called Satoshi Kon. And even in Requiem, say it the real way this time, Requiem for a Dream, he even used imagery from one of his films. I think he even paid him to be able to use
a couple of stills or something.
Not even use the stills, but almost use his work as a storyboard for certain scenes in Requiem for a Dream. But this is a film that he made after that. This is a movie called Paprika.
Sci-fi.
By Satoshi Kon. And so we are basically recalibrating it to go a little bit more into the sublime, a little bit more into the surrealness of Spirited Away. This is an anime film that is
so excited,
quite
dude.
Literally the primary influence for Inception. It came out just a few years before. It was a major influence. I'm going to read you a little bit of the plot. It is about a scientist who, under a codename Paprika, is a dream detective at night. Atsuko and her colleagues are working on a device called the DC Mini, which is intended to help psychiatric patients, but in the wrong hands, it could destroy people's minds. What that device is... it is a device that links up to your head where you can kind of share dreams with people and you can enter other people's dreams.
Whoa. Ding, ding, ding.
We're hitting something here. And when a prototype is stolen, Paprika springs into action to recover it before damage is done. And this is kind of doing those things you were talking about, like how Nolan's grounded, how he kind of finds these dreams and in a reality of representation. But here, this is... once again, that pure imagination. You literally begin in a circus with this film, and it gets wild and more warped since that starting point. And it's just a truly mesmerizing visual experience. For me, it's one of the best representations of dreams and dream logic, how things don't quite make sense, but they do when you're in there watching them,
when you're experiencing them. When you're in there having, enjoying or not enjoying the dream, you're like, this is so real. And then you come out and you're like, oh no, that was a horse that had gills and it was underwater with a gun.
That's it.
But that made sense.
Dude, have you seen this movie? Because that's kind of what happens in this.
Yeah, I watched it last night when I shut the eyes. Yeah.
But Satoshi Kon, he's like a surrealist master in my opinion. Yeah. And I think he was a prophet. Like he could see things that were yet to be discovered. His first movie, Perfect Blue, which is a big inspiration for Darren Aronofsky, especially when it comes to this Requiem for a Dream, and also Black Swan is kind of inspired by another one of his movies as well together. He kind of saw things that were happening in the future. Like Perfect Blue is from 1997 and it is about parasocial relationships and the darkness of them through the internet. And so it's like, how did this guy know? Parasocial wasn't even really a term used in 1997. And now it's like...
that's the first time I've heard it used in real life.
But it's kind of like, man, this guy, he was it. And I think you would like all of his movies. But Paprika is a great place for you to start.
Well, Alexi, thank you. I cannot wait to watch it.
And this is a special copy. This is an actual extra rental from the video store I worked at as a teenager.
It's even got the, I'm not sure if Alexi's put this in.
That's my handwriting from when I was 16 years old.
We can't ever be sure if this is part of arts, if this is part of the arts department. But thank you. Thank you very much. I cannot wait to dive into it.
Well, we're going to get out of here and we're going to go watch freaking Spawn.
Let's go watch Spawn, baby. Alexi, thank you.
My pleasure, my brother.
The last video store.
Well, what a wonderful show with Tony Armstrong, my dear buddy, and sick picks, brother. I'll admit it. Sick freaking picks. What a great combo. And let me tell you, we can find those movies. Parasite, you can rent on VOD if you haven't seen it, but it's a sensation you probably have. Spirited Away, the surrealist classic, is on Netflix. And Heat, the classic heist film, is on Disney Plus, which just seems crazy to me that it's on Disney Plus. And of course, Inception is on Binge, baby. You can binge Inception. And then finally, Paprika, my perfect recommendation for Tony, is on Netflix as well. And I'll tell you this, Tony watched the movie and he sent me 10,000 messages about how much he loved it. Maybe I'll share those on the Instagram, which you can find at lastvideostorebattuta, and I'll be sharing those screenshots of all his praise for that wonderful flick on there, plus a few little bonuses here and there. You can watch this show on YouTube, you can listen to it as a podcast, and let me tell you this, you too are a member of The Last Video Store. So I want to treat you just like I do all the other members of The Last Video Store. I want to give you a bespoke staff pick recommendation, and the best way to get me your new release, your two weeklies, is as a comment on a five-star review on Apple Podcasts, a comment on our YouTube page for one of the episodes, and if you want, Last Video Store Batuta on Instagram, DM us a voice message, and I will give you your bespoke staff pick recommendation based on your new release and your two weeklies. So send them in, babes, across all of those platforms, and I'll get to you. I'll get to you. It might take time, but baby, I will get to you. It is my freaking mission on earth to do this. So, of course, you're welcome into The Last Video Store anytime. Until the next time we meet, I'm just going to say this one thing. I love films.